Anyway, Judges chapter 9 is where we are this morning. We left off in the middle of the chapter last week, long about verse number 26, 27. The flow of the story is this. In chapter 6, 7, and 8, you have Gideon. He obviously threw down the altar of Baal. He led an army, was used of God, and then he judged the nation of Israel for a while after that. But, you know, we read at the end of chapter 8 that he had 70 sons, and then he had another son who was the son of a concubine, a lesser status. And then in the start of chapter 9, the son of the concubine made a deal with the people. Hey, wouldn't it be better for you to just work with one person, me, instead of dealing with all 70 of them? And he killed all but one of his 70 brothers. Okay, so for a while, he got to enjoy the benefits of that. But in long about verse 25, 26, that begins to fall apart. Verse 25, the men of Shechem set liars in wait for him in the top of the mountains. And they robbed all that came along that way by them, and it was told Abimelech. So what they started... They made a deal with Abimelech. It lasted for a little while, then it starts to fall apart. So now they are setting highway robbers in the mountains and trying to blame it on Abimelech, make it look like Abimelech's behind this. Okay, verse 26, Gaal the son of Ebed came with his brethren, went to Shechem, and the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. And they went out in the fields and gathered their vineyards and trod the grapes and made merry and went to the house of their God and did eat and drink and cursed Abimelech. Now that whole process there in verses 25 to 28 was over a period of time. He comes and tries to gain the confidence of these men, and part of his appeal there in verse number 26 was that he was of the same heritage as them. If you look in verse number 28, Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is not he the son of Jerubbabel? And Zebul, his officer, served the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. So what's happening here is even though Abimelech's mom was from the local area, Gideon was not. We talked about it last time, but there was kind of the rivalry between Ephraim and Manasseh. And so even though Abimelech's mom was from the same tribe, his dad was from Manasseh. And so there's that. And so here in verse 28, Gaal is saying, I'm one of you. I'm a son of Hamor. If you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 34, you see that that's the very early original inhabitants of this area of Hamor. If you remember, one of the sons of the land, fell in love with Dinah, and then when he mistreated her, her brothers killed them in revenge, and that's the descent of these people. So the crux of this is, you see, I'm calling this an insurrection or a rebellion or an overthrow, whatever you want to call it, but Gaal here, his appeal is, I am one of you. My family has been in this area forever. Abimelech's not one of us. We need to get rid of him and get back to, you know, our local family kind of thing. But in verse 27, it talks about how they gathered the vineyards, trod the grapes, and then they were drinking the wine. So that was an extended process, okay? So this more than likely was a harvest time festival where they got done with all the harvest and the processing and all that, and now they're having a celebration. Very likely, verse 27 tells us they went into the house of their God, so it would have had a religious, you know, connotation to it. And if, you know, the connotation here is that they're getting drunk, and it's very often, you know, my dad, before he got saved, was a drinker, and he's told me some of those things, but he said there's pretty much, two major categories of drinkers, you know, those that are happy and those that are angry, but, you know, it tends to inflame things. Well, here he got another thing my dad used to say about alcohol sometimes, he called it liquid courage. You know, sometimes that under the influence of that, it would embolden somebody to do something they wouldn't do under normal circumstances. Well, Gaal here, apparently, the more he consumes, the more he starts running his mouth. Okay? If you look in verse 28, Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who's Abimelech, and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbabel? Jerubbabel there, or Jerubbaal, is the name that was given to Gideon when he tore down the altar of Baal. That was the first thing he did in chapter 6 when God began to speak to him. So he's saying, look, Abimelech's the son of Jerubbaal, the one who threw down the altar of Baal. And we serve Baal. What are we doing here? It is not Zebul, his officer. The word officer there in verse 28 refers to a deputy or an overseer. So it's like he was the officer in charge of that city for Abimelech the king. That's the idea here. He was the top officer in that city. Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for why should we serve him? Verse 29, would to God this people were under my hand. Then would I remove Abimelech? And he said to Abimelech, increase thine army and come out. Now, I think the phrase there in verse 29 is kind of like a speech. I don't think this was a face-to-face challenge with Abimelech, but I think, you know, as he's giving his, you know, drunken ramblings and the people are kind of responding favorably. I mean, you've seen that, right? Somebody gets to talking and people start to laughing or agreeing or cheering, and then they just keep going and keep going. It's kind of like that. You know, hey, Abimelech, bring out your army and we'll see who should be in charge. I don't think it was said face to face based on the rest of the story here, but that's the idea. His wine emboldened him. Verse 30, when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled. And he sent messengers unto Abimelech privily, that means privately or secretly, saying, behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brethren be come to Shechem. And behold, they fortify the city against thee. Now therefore, up by night, thou and the people that is with thee, and lie in wait in the field. It shall be in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, thou shalt rise early and set upon the city. And behold, when he and the people that is with him come out against thee, then mayest thou do to them as thou shalt find occasion. Now, the top officer here in Shechem is Zebul. He sends a messenger to Abimelech and says, you need to get in here during the night and be ready in the morning to deal with this rebellion. What does that tell us about where did Abimelech live? At least it wasn't in Shechem full time, right? I mean, the way you originally read it, it's almost like maybe he, but then you see in the end of the chapter, he went on to another nearby city and dealt with them too. So the Shechem, it may have been he started out with the men of Shechem and then kind of expanded his area a little bit, the area that was under his rule. Or it may be that when he made a deal with the men of Shechem, that was more with a region that included three or four smaller cities that went together. Either way, it seems like at this point in time, Abimelech did not live full time in Shechem. So his chief officer sent secretly or privately sent messengers saying, hey, this guy Gaal is a problem. You need to deal with him. Now, it seems like he's trying to frame it in such a way that Gaal is the bad guy and he's really the problem. The rest of the city's fine. You can leave the rest of us alone. You can leave me in charge of it. That's kind of interesting. But he sent a message and he said, look, you need to get here in the night, get your people set up. When the sun comes up in the morning, you need to deal with this guy. All right, verse 34. Abimelech rose up, and all the people that were with him by night, and they laid wait against Shechem in four companies. So they have four areas where he's divided out the men. Obviously, he knew the area well enough to militarily know the strategy. Verse 35. Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entering of the gate of the city. And Abimelech rose up and the people that were with him from lying in wait. Now, why did Gaal go out and stand in the gate of the city? Okay, who would normally go to the gate of the city in Bible days in this economy? Who normally sat there? It's okay, it's Sunday school. You can give your input. the elders, the political officials, so the judges, the princes, the elders. So Zebul would have been there because he was one of the officers. He's a political official. Okay, Gaal would have been there because he's trying to present himself as such, one of the leaders of the city. All right, so they're both there. All right, verse 35. Abimelech and the people that were with him rose up from lying in wait. Verse 36, when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, there come people down from the top of the mountains. And Zebul said, thou seest the shadow of the mountains as if they were men. Ah, you're just seeing things. Your eyes are playing tricks on you. You've never had that happen to you, right? Okay, you've never thought you saw something that wasn't really there. He's like, no, it's just the shadows. I mean, the sun's not all the way up yet. You're just kind of seeing a little bit of breeze, moving the trees. You know, it's not a big deal. Verse 36, in the middle of the verse, Zebul said to him, thou seest the shadow of the mountains if they were men. Verse 37, Gaal spake again and said, see, there come people down by the middle of the land, and another company come along by the plain of Meoninim. And Zebul said unto him, where is now thy mouth? Wherewith thou saidst, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? I love that phrase right there. Where is now thy mouth? I mean, obviously it's right here. You can see it, in between the nose and the chin, okay? But at this point, he plays his card like he knows what's actually happening, okay? So when the movement starts down the mountains, he tries to deny it. But then there was another group on the flatlands that are coming up, and that one, it was impossible to deny that one. He's like, oh yeah, you ran your big mouth yesterday or day before when you were all drunk and full of wine, and who's Abimelech and who's Zebul and why should we deal with them? All right, big mouth, let's put your money where your mouth is. It's in essence what he's saying, right? That's not what the Hebrew says. That's my interpretation of that, okay? Verse 38, Zebul said unto him, where is now thy mouth? Wherewith thou saidst, who's Abimelech that we should serve him? Is not this the people that thou hast despised? Go out, I pray now, and fight with them. He says, hey boy, you don't like them? You've been running your mouth? Go get them. There they are. That's kind of, this is getting kind of fun, isn't it? Verse 39, Gaal went out before the men of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. Verse 40, and Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many were overthrown and wounded, even unto the entering of the gate. So what happens here? You have his rebellion, but who militarily, who was the superior officer? Abimelech was. You see that in the rest of the chapter as well. Okay? Gaal might have thought politically that he had the backing of people, but militarily, he didn't know what he was doing. Okay, so he took on Abimelech when he never should have, and his pride led him to his destruction. Verse 40, Abimelech chased him, and many were overthrown and wounded. Verse 41, Abimelech dwelt at Arumah, and Zebul thrust out Gaal and his brethren that they should not dwell in Shechem. So they were soundly defeated. The men that followed him were killed. And, if he wasn't killed then, I think Gaal would have been killed shortly here, okay? But Zebul thrust out Gaal and his brethren. Now, here's the bottom line. Zebul didn't like the fact that his position was being challenged. If Gaal wins in this rebellion, then Zebul gets thrown out too because he's an officer of the king. So now that the rebellion's been put down, now Zebul is able to throw out Gaal and hold on to his position, at least for a little while. All right, so you have verse 40, you have the rebellion of Gaal. Well, then starting in verse number 42, we have the destruction of Shechem. Came to pass on the morrow that the people went out into the field. Now, what does that mean? The people went out into the field. Okay, what that means is they think the battle's over and they can go back to work. Where was a lot of their work? I mean, you had the walls of the city, which is where they would go for protection at night and that kind of thing, but they went back out to the fields. They had to work the crops. They had to take care of the animals. So, I mean, the city walls would have been the place of safety, but now it seems like they think that, all right, this whole mess with Gaal is over, and now we can kind of go back to our regular way of life. End of verse 42, and they told Abimelech, verse 43, he took the people, divided them into three companies, and laid wait in the field. Now, if you go back to verse 40, Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many were overthrown and wounded, even unto the entering of the gate. And verse 41, Abimelech dwelt at Arumah. So there's a different city. So Abimelech was living somewhere else other than Shechem. Okay? So it seems like Gaal and his people, you know, the ones that lived, they went back into the city. Well, that's when Zebul throws out Gaal and all of that. Okay? But then Abimelech went back to Arumah. So now they think, okay, this rebellion's over. Abimelech's gone. It's going to kind of calm down and smooth over. Well, what does verse 43 say? It says, Abimelech wasn't done with them. Abimelech took the people and divided them into three companies and laid wait in the field. And behold, the people were come forth out of the city. And he rose up against them and smote them. And Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood in the entering of the gate of the city. And the two other companies ran upon all the people that were in the fields and slew them. All right, what does that mean that they stood in the gate of the city? It means they cut off any path of retreat. Okay, so you had three groups. Well, one group, their assignment was to go stand in the gate. Anybody that's trying to run back into the city and get inside the gates and walls for protection, their job was to kill them and cut them off. Okay, in a much tamer setting, that happened at the teen activity Friday night. They told the teens that they could scatter out over the property and hide, but instead of swords, they gave the parents pool noodles. Okay, but the deal was the kids could hide, and they had to get back to the base, which was there by where the campfire was. And, you know, our job was to capture as many of them as we could. Okay. So what did we do? We put some people there to defend the campfire, and then we tried to go out in kind of a systematic order and find as many of them as we could. Okay, we didn't get all of them, but we got most of them. Well, in a far more serious life and death way, that's what happened here. They put a guard at the gate to prevent a retreat, and then the other units deal with the people out in the fields. The end of verse 44 says the two other companies ran upon all the people that were in the fields and slew them. Now, why was this going on? Verse 45, Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he took the city and slew the people that was therein and beat down the city and sowed it with salt. That's pretty intense, is it not? Would you say that Abimelech was upset? I think that would be putting it very mildly. Now, why was Abimelech so upset with them? If you go back to verse number 4, it says, they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons. All right, I told you last time that Baal-berith, the word berith is a transliteration into English of the Hebrew word for covenant. Berith means covenant. So they had made a covenant together. Abimelech's going to be our leader. And it was supposed to be a solemn thing based on their God, even though it was an idol. Okay? So now, when they rebelled against Abimelech, they had broken the covenant. Well, in Bible days, you know, that the covenant was a very serious thing. In fact, if you go back to Genesis 15, which you don't have to turn there, you can read it on your own. This afternoon or later on this week. But Genesis chapter 15, when God made a covenant with Abraham, we call it the Abrahamic covenant, God told Abraham to take several animals. He had like a sheep and goat and birds, and I don't remember if he had an ox or not, but he had several animals, and it says he divided them in the midst. What that means is he cut them in half. They put half on this side. They would have two like stone tables or altars or whatever you want to call them, and they put half the animal over here and half the animal over here. And the process of making a covenant in ancient days was that they would walk between the pieces. They call it passing between the pieces. For us, it's like, okay, you walked in between, big deal. But the symbolism was this. You know, the two of us, or the parties to the covenant, whether it was two or whether it was, you know, a group of elders from two cities, the parties to the covenant would walk between the two tables or altars there and walk in between them. Symbolically, what they were saying is, we have entered into this agreement. If I break this covenant, you have the right to do to me the same thing that happened to those animals. That is, cut me in half. Okay? I mean, that was the process of making covenants between people. In Genesis chapter 15, what you see is that God made a deep sleep come on Abraham, and it was only a smoking furnace and a burning lamp. You know, God is light. You know, our Hebrew says our God is a consuming fire. The smoking furnace and burning lamp, that was a visual illustration of the presence of God. Only God passed between the pieces. The symbolism for the people of that day that they would understand immediately was this, that the Abrahamic covenant only depended on God. It was an unconditional covenant. Okay? But if you come back here to the covenant, the idea is this, that, you know, this is a life or death thing. If you break this covenant, you are worthy of death. So what's Abimelech doing? They broke the covenant, and now he's going to go out and kill them. Verse 45, he fought against that city all that day, and he took the city and slew the people that was therein and beat down the city and sowed it with salt. He broke down the walls and he sowed it with salt. What's the purpose of sowing it with salt? Any of you fertilize your yard with salt? Your garden? Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to do. The salt's going to stop growth. It's going to kill things. You're 100% right. So when they would do something like this, the idea was that this was like a permanent destruction of the city. They sowed the ground with salt so nothing would grow there, so they couldn't go and rebuild it back. They couldn't live there because they couldn't grow anything. The grass wouldn't grow for their animals. Their crops wouldn't grow when they sowed the fields with salt. This was like a total destruction, like a permanent move. Not just a victory in battle and we're going to leave them to lick their wounds and rebuild. Knock down the walls, knock down the houses, sowed the fields with salt. I mean, Abimelech was angry. He was dead serious about this. Okay? So he's completely destroyed Shechem. Verse 46, when all the men of the tower of Shechem heard that, they entered into a hold of the house of the god Bereath. Okay, remember the word Bereath is covenant. So remember, it talked before about Baal Bereath, the god of the covenant. This was their house of worship there locally that they went into. Now, the men of the tower of Shechem, I take that phrase to mean that that was the leadership, the princes, the nobles, the elders, you know, that group. When they heard that Abimelech was knocking down the walls and it's getting close, where did they go for safety? They went into the house of their god. Verse 47. It was told Abimelech that all the men of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech got him up to Mount Zalmon. This would have been nearby. He and the people that were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand, and he cut down a bough from the trees, and he took it and laid it on his shoulders, and he said unto the people that were with him, what ye have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done. All right, so they've all retreated to a safe place. He's like, all right, I know how to get him out of there. He goes to the closest, you know, woods, cuts down the biggest limb he can carry, and he says, all right, you follow my lead. You follow my example. So they get their axes out. They're cutting down wood. Now, here's my thought. Any of you ever tried to cut down a limb like this and burn it instantly? It's green wood, okay? I don't know. I mean, green wood, if it does catch, is going to smoke, right? Maybe that was part of that thing. I mean, there had to have been some dry firewood somewhere they could get started with, okay? Now, is this really important in the grand scheme of the story? Probably not, but these are the dumb questions I ask myself sometimes, you know? But they're cutting down green limbs, green branches, but they're collecting that. Now, how many men does Abimelech have with him? I don't know, but I'm going to guess it's several hundred, maybe a few thousand. So, if you get, you know, 3,000 branches. That make a decent bonfire? Yeah, it could. There's no rule that says they could only make one trip. I mean, so they're going to get enough wood to make a huge fire. Verse 49, all the people likewise cut down every man his bough and followed Abimelech and put them to the hold and set the hold on fire upon them, so that all the men of the Tower of Shechem died also, about 1,000 men and women. Now, the first several times I read this, I thought he was doing this in a tower, but he wasn't. This was in the house of their God. Because the previous verse says they went to the house of Baal-berith. So they went to the house of the God. So they're hiding in the temple compound, if you will. And Abimelech's like, fine, we'll smoke them out or we'll burn them out. So they built a huge bonfire at the entrances to this, and they burned the house of their God down on top of their head and killed them all. Abimelech's a nice guy, right? I mean, how do we first meet Abimelech? He goes to the men of Shechem and says, hey, wouldn't it be better to deal with me than to deal with my 70 half-brothers? Yeah, so then what did he do to his 70 brothers? He killed them all on one stone. He gathered them all to one place and they had an execution. Just the youngest escaped. So his career started out by political executions. Why did the men of Shechem think it was going to go any differently 3 or 4 years later? All right, you rebel against Abimelech, you know, you better not miss, because if you don't kill him, he's coming after you, and that's exactly what happened. So they go and they make this huge bonfire, they set the house of their God on fire and literally burn them to death or kill them when they come out. Nice guy, right? Not at all. Now, some of you may be thinking, how does Abimelech get away with this? Well, let me answer that question with another question. Did God create us all robots? Or did he create us with the ability to make choices? Okay, God made us with the ability to choose. God is glorified when we choose to love him and serve him. Okay? He didn't make robots. What that means is God has allowed us to make good choices, but that also means we can make sinful choices, right? So God is allowing Abimelech to exercise choice. However, what you see here in the last section is that he reaped what he sowed. He didn't last that long. In verse number 50, then went Abimelech to Thebez and encamped against Thebez and took it. So again, I take this to be another nearby city. The commentators will speculate this, that, the other. But basically, these are all in close proximity. Verse 50, there's another city that at one time, I think, would have been part of that group that made a covenant with Abimelech. Verse 51, there was a strong tower within the city. And thither fled all the men and women, and all they of the city shut it up to them and gat them up to the top of the tower. And Abimelech came unto the tower and fought against it and went hard under the door of the tower to burn it with fire. So it seems like this was their fortress, this was their stronghold. If they got attacked, they had this tower and they more than likely had it stocked. Okay, if you know anybody that's got a storm shelter that's stocked with freeze-dried food and that kind of thing, I mean, they were prepared like this. We get attacked, this is our place, we can... we can survive there a while. I think the fact some commentators have speculated, and it makes sense to me, if they had a millstone available, which is part of the story here, then it's quite possible that they had made preparations that they could stay there a while. What did they use a millstone for? Grinding the wheat and the grains to make their flour, make their bread. So it's entirely possible that they had stocked this to where they could survive a siege. Like they could live a while there. It wasn't just overnight, or we'll survive with, granola bars and bottled water, It seems like they maybe had prepared this to survive a while. But in verse 52, it says Abimelech went hard to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. What's he trying to do? The exact same thing he did to Shechem. Okay. He's like, all right, let's do it again. Let's build a bonfire right here by the door, and we'll either smoke them out of the tower or we'll burn the door down. We'll get in. So that's what he's trying to do. Verse 53, a certain woman cast a piece of a millstone upon Abimelech's head and all to break his skull. Why does Abimelech get away with this? Well, that's not maybe a fair question. Why did God let him do it? Because God made us with the ability to choose. Did he get away with it? Not forever. Right? God doesn't work on our timetable all the time. In fact, we heard that Wednesday night, for those of you that were here when Brother Jeremy preached, right? Psalm 73, he says, I was frustrated when I looked at the prosperity of the wicked, and says, then God changed my perspective. God doesn't always work on our timetable, but God does always work. Okay? Here, Abimelech has assassinated his 70 brothers. He missed the youngest one. And now he has, you know, assassinated or killed all of the men of Shechem. And he seems to be just a ruthless, power-hungry, authoritarian-type ruler. Why does he get away with this? Well, God made sure he didn't. This story here in verse 53, a certain woman, we don't even know her name. That's all we know, some lady. Okay, good for her. I'm glad she had good aim. But she's looking out the window. She's got a window that's right above the door. I mean, how high was this tower? I don't know, but let's just assume for argument's sake that it's 5 stories high, 50 or 60 feet. Okay? I mean, she's going to drop this thing 50 feet. You know, if you're off just a little bit, it's going to miss by 3 feet, right? She had pretty good aim when she dropped this thing on its head. And those things were not light either. You know, that usually the way the millstones worked, there was a bottom stone that was much heavier that was kind of stationary. And then the top stone, which is what this would have been, if I'm remembering correctly, yeah, a piece of a mill, it would have been the top stone. That's the part that would turn, that would do the grinding. But she leans out the window, drops it right on his head, bombs away. Pfft, okay? She cracks his skull. Now notice in verse number 54, he called hastily to the young man, his armor bearer, and said, draw thy sword and slay me, that men say not of me, a woman slew him. And the young man thrust him through and he died. It was in, you see here Abimelech's soldier's mindset. He was a soldier to the end. But what was the mindset? I don't want it to be told of me that a woman killed me. You kill me. I mean, it was considered an honor. But what does the Bible record? A woman broke his skull. Did he get away from that story? No. God made sure he reaped what he sowed, and he died in dishonor. Did Abimelech get away with it? Not forever. Did he get away with it for a little while? Kind of, sort of. I mean, God allowed him to do things. And yes, you know, things were done by Abimelech, but God also judged him for it. Verse 55, when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed every man to his place. Thus God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father in slaying his 70 brethren, and all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render upon their heads. And upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbabel. You remember, in the early part of the chapter that we looked at last week, the parable was the trees went looking for a king and none of the other trees would take it. So a bramble took it. And Jotham's curse was, let fire come out from, you know, the briars and burn it all down. Is that not what happened? Okay, the men of Shechem turned against Abimelech. They broke their covenant. God used Abimelech to judge them. Well, then God used a woman and a millstone to judge Abimelech. In other words, they deserved each other, they got each other, and you know, they burned each other to the ground in essence. God made sure that they got exactly what they deserved. Now, it doesn't always happen on our schedule, but God doesn't forget. God takes care of things. If there's something you're like, Lord, why don't you deal with this? Maybe we need to pray, Lord, would you deal with it and would you help me to see your timeline? I know you hadn't forgot about it. You know, this story right here where he got a millstone dropped on his head was quoted by David and Joab later on when he was having Uriah assassinated. This became part of military legend for centuries. So in other words, Abimelech's judgment became part of the instruction in the military schools. God made sure that Abimelech got what he deserved. Lord, help us to see your timing, right? Help us to understand your schedule and to be patient. Don't take matters into your own hands. Let God handle the situation. Thank you, Lord, for your word. Thank you for the practical lessons. Help us to live them. Help us to trust you and your timing. And we'll thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. You are dismissed.